Hello, I'm Eric Topol, editor-in-chief of Medscape, and I'm really pleased for this one-on-one interview with Marty Blaser, who runs the Human Microbiome Center at New York University. He has been a leader in infectious disease for decades. And so it's really great to have a chance to talk to you about the hottest area of medicine today, the microbiome. So, Marty, welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You got into this area of decades ago. And did you ever think when you were working on things like Heliobacter that it was going to blossom into such a central part of where medicine's going forward?
No, I think that's the great thing about a career in science is that you don't exactly know where it's going to lead you. And when I was working on diseases of the stomach, I had no idea that it would lead me into allergy and obesity and diabetes.
So you were more like a traditional infectious disease specialist as you started?
Clinically, I was a specialist in infectious disease, and my research was about pathogens. Mm. I started with Campylobacter, an organism that causes diarrhea.
Yes.
And then a new Campylobacter was discovered in the stomach. It was called Campylobacter, but ultimately they changed the name to Helicobacter. That was Helicobacter pylori. So I'm still following the thread that began in 1977 when I saw a patient with Campylobacter bacteremia.
Wow. Were you all part of the whole thing with Barry Marshall and no one believed any of this stuff?
Well, a little of that has been embellished over the years, but because Barry, I was at the conference, the first international conference when he presented his work, and it was clear that he had found a new organism in the stomach. And within months, there were papers in The Lancet showing that they could replicate his findings, that they found it, and finding the association. But over the years, Barry and others showed that getting rid of this organism, Helicobacter, changed the natural history of ulcer disease. And that was obviously a big finding. They won the Nobel Prize for that, and it was an important observation. And then we and others showed that Helicobacter was important in stomach cancer, which is the second leading cause of cancer death in the world.
Well, and as you pointed out at our program, that this has markedly changed the incidence by being able to understand root cause of a pathogen.
Well, actually, the incidence changed even before Helicobacter was discovered.
Is that right?
Yeah. It started going down in the 1930s, probably because of clean water, smaller families. We're not sure of all the factors, but it's clear. Mm. In 1900, gastric cancer was the number one cause of cancer death in the United States. Now it's gone down tenfold.
But has the understanding accelerated the reduction, or has it really been a steady fact?
That's hard to know because the understanding is relatively recent. And gastric cancer is a disease that takes decades to develop. It probably develops over 60 years on average.
Okay, well, now today, if we go fast forward from when you got your start with Campylobacter research, of course, also being working as a physician as well, but then we go to the point where the microbiome seems to be responsible for everything. And you have this phenomenal book, Missing Microbes, which really delves into this topic broadly. Can you give us what are the things that we should acknowledge are real? What things are maybe too much of a reach? Where are we with the microbiome and influencing disease and health today?
Yeah. So I'm working in a particular area of the microbiome, and it's an area that I think has importance. And the basic idea is that the microbiome is ancient, that the organisms that we carry are not random, and that they've been selected over eons of evolution, and that they're important for our physiology, and there's lots of evidence for that. And then my big point is that they're changing. And as a result of the change, there are health consequences. One of the health consequences that is good is that as Helicobacter is disappearing, there's less stomach cancer. That's good news. But as Helicobacter is disappearing, there's more esophageal disease, and there's more asthma. And both of these have been linked to the lack of Helicobacter. And I believe that there's a general paradigm that we are losing important organisms early in life, and that's fueling some of the diseases that are epidemic today. And we've been studying this in the lab.
Well, you've noted so many factors. For example, C-sections, the big rise in C-sections, changing flora from birth and the use of antibiotics in a promiscuous way. What are some of the other factors that have really been contributing to this, really changing the landscape of diseases because of the practices that we have?
Yeah, I think those are the two biggest factors. as far as I can tell at this time. But there are a lot of things that we just don't understand. I think one of the hypotheses that I have, which is really alarming, and it's why I wrote the book and why I talk about that, is that the effects are cumulative over time, and it's cumulative across generations. And I'll show that idea later. Mm-hmm. But if they're cumulative, that means that C-sections plus antibiotics are important, and the second antibiotic is important, not only the first one, and maybe all the washing and all the antiseptics and even the clean water. And clean water is an amazing blessing. It's we don't have pathogens like diseases like typhoid fever or cholera, but by eliminating pathogens, we've also eliminated the commensals that travel between us. Mm. And I think that there's a hidden cost there.
Do you think that obesity that we have at epidemic proportions is anchored to the microbiome changes?
I do, and that's a central area of the work that we're doing. And it's based on an observation that goes back 70 years, and that is that farmers found that they could increase the growth of their livestock by giving them low doses of antibiotics. And they found that the earlier in life they gave the antibiotics, the more profound the effect. And that's what we're doing to our
kids.
But
also there's been beyond the antibiotic use, there's been changes in diet, for example, via guidelines. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, low-fat diets with high carbohydrate or things like red meat and ingestion. So how do these other, I guess, dietary changes, do you think, have a material effect?
I think the number one most important dietary change is the move from breast milk to formula. Mm-hmm. I think that's the most important. But there's lots of evidence that obesity is beginning in childhood. It's beginning very early. The seeds are there, and that's fueling the growth. And that's before kids have a chance to become couch potatoes. It's before there are big changes in diet, except for this one about formula. But we've done studies in mice in which we can show that giving mice antibiotics early at life make them fat. Putting mice on a high-fat diet makes them fat. And putting them on both together makes them very fat. Mm. Mm. Suggesting, again, this idea of additive risk.
Right, and cumulative, as you say. So what about the notion that whenever we change the diet, like, for example, artificial sweeteners, that's been attributed to changes in the microbiome and adverse effects. And there's so many of these things coming out now. It seems like peanut allergies, I mean, you name it, there's something about the microbiome. Are we really to buy into that, or does it take a lot more proof to link all this together?
Well, the microbiome is a big place, just like human genetics is a big place.
And maybe even bigger.
Well, I think all important science needs confirmation. And I'm, again, focusing mostly on the early events.
Okay.
You know, when somebody's had obesity for 50 years, I think it's hard to tease out.
Yes.
And peanut allergy, you raise that point, is a really good example. It used to be quite uncommon.
Yeah.
And now it's gotten quite common. So what's happened?
Right. But,
and it begins in childhood. And certain allergies and asthma begin in childhood. And so that's where we're really focusing on is the early development.
Yeah, so the allergies and the asthma, which is really a rampant increase, how do we link that together? Is it really, like you said, the antibiotics and the C-sections? And is that really the story, you think? In terms of not maybe the fine points, but yeah, part of the...
In a word, yes.
Okay.
And the reason is that the early life microbiota help choreograph development. They choreograph metabolic development. They choreograph immune development. The microbiota teaches the developing immune system what's self and what's not self.
Yeah.
And of course, we're changing it, I believe, in a substantial way.
Now, there's a couple other things going on in this field that I'd love to get your comments on. One of them is about using drugs and preparations to change the microbiome, potentially, as you're getting at, restoring it to the way it used to be before we kind of screwed it up. And there's new companies cropping up and all kinds of, this is beyond probiotics, of course. What are your thoughts about we'll be able to engineer in a salutary way the microbiome?
You know, I think we're really at the beginning of a big scientific frontier. And I believe that we're going to have great probiotics in the future that will be scientifically developed, not the kinds of stuff that is available in hundreds of different compounds in pharmacies, health food stores, grocery stores. The shelves are loaded with compounds called probiotics. And what I can say is that they're generally safe and they're almost completely untested.
Right. Now, the other thing that's starting to be the rage is people analyzing their own, at least gut microbiome through a stool sample, and there these companies, Ubiome, American, get all these different projects. What are your thoughts about that?
You know, right now, the information is unlikely to be useful to anybody. In fact, I sent my sample into American Gut. I'm kind of part of American Gut. And actually, I still haven't gotten around to looking at it. So that's probably the test that this one day that information should be useful, or some fraction of that information. Of course, we don't know which fraction it's going to be.
Do you think at some point when we are caring for patients that we'll be serially assessing the microbiome, and that will be our kind of way to predict and preempt illness?
Yeah. That's the last slide I'm going to show today, and that is that the doctors of the future are going to take that baby in diapers, and they're going to analyze the diaper and try to figure out what are the organisms that that baby has, and how does it fit with their genotype, and which ones might have to be replaced. Are they global ones that every baby needs, or are there some that are missing that that baby in particular needs?
That's great. What were your thoughts about McDonald's getting rid of the chicken with antibiotics fed? Is that a step in the right direction?
Absolutely. And again, our microbiome is being impacted in so many different ways because farmers are using so much antibiotics on the farm. That's getting into meats to some degree. And it's in milk to some degree.
In the water supply.
In the water supply. There are people who live in cities where their water intake is downstream of the effluent from these industrial farms.
No, it's just remarkable.
In China, it's just amazing because they're using 10 times as much antibiotics on the farm as we are. And so in some cities, you can measure the antibiotic concentrations in the water. And, you know, people in China are growing.
Yeah. Well, the insights you provided throughout your career and through your center at NYU have been phenomenal. So it's really a great chance to get to visit with you and hear the latest thoughts you have, the real perspective. You certainly qualify as one of the most interesting people in medicine, and I hope that everybody in our Medscape audience will start to get into the microbiome even more and learn through your efforts of missing microbes. So thanks so much for joining us, and thank all of you for joining this Medscape one-on-one interview. Thank you.